We were raised on a macrobiotic diet.
Okay. So Sagit, why don't you tell me basically a little bit about your life, like how you grew up and where you're from, because you have a very interesting look about you.
Thank you.
You look like you're mixed with a couple of real good things. Your parents were both handsome. Or, I mean, your father was handsome, your mother was beautiful.
Yes, that's sort of the case. So my father's background, he's Finnish and Scottish, but American. So his, I guess, European background is from the Northern Hemisphere side. Then on my mother's side, she's Japanese from the Kansai region. So,
okay. Do you have siblings?
Yes. So growing up, I had three brothers and a sister, and I was the middle child. And so I had
same mother and father for all of them.
Yeah, we're one unit, still
now,
one unit.
Once again, say it again. You had what? Three?
Two older brothers.
Two older brothers.
A younger brother and the youngest sister.
Five of you?
Yeah, and I was the middle guy.
So your parents tried five times to have a girl and they finally succeeded the last one.
And then they stopped having babies, I guess. So, yeah.
Did they want a girl?
I believe my mother did.
Okay, now is your father Catholic?
He was raised Roman Catholic.
That's why the kids,
but,
okay.
You know, like a lot of Americans in the 70s, he kind of went on a exploration trip,
right,
so to speak. So
okay, where were you born?
I was born in Kyoto near Kamigamo Jinja, surprisingly. And happened to also be born on my mother's birthday.
So on your mother's birthday?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting in that sense.
How are your parents doing now?
Yeah, they're living in Atlanta. And my father still works from time to time in London.
Okay.
And yeah, they're still together.
What did your father do? What kind of work did he do when you were younger?
When I was younger, he was working. He and my mother were really into macrobiotics. So we were raised on a macrobiotic diet, which was, you know, interesting as a kid.
Okay.
You're eating brown rice and miso soup while your other American friends are eating mac and cheese and fried chicken or something like that. But you know, in hindsight, you realize the strong bodily foundation that you carry forward and that you are more or less resilient against a lot of illnesses that some people will succumb to.
Right.
I think partly because there's not a lot of sugar in that diet. And there's a lot of nutrients involved.
But what do you do? What kind of work did you do?
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
that's okay. No, getting that's interesting. That. But both your parents work?
No, not at the time. I mean, so when they were in Kyoto, they actually relocated to Uji, which is about 30-40 minutes away, especially from Kamigamo, because it's kind of a hike through Kyoto.
Right.
But there, they opened up maybe one of Japan's first natural food stores.
Okay.
And I believe it was called Essen, like the German word to eat.
So he was an entrepreneur or what? Why did?
Oh, I mean, he really wanted to, I don't know, he was really into this like macrobiotic thing and to maybe bring healthy foods into society.
How did he come here?
He came here on his own. You know, like I said, he was initially when he was in the States, he was studying this macrobiotic teacher called Michio Kushi, who became a very prominent macrobiotic teacher in the U.S. And this guy is also like recognized in the Smithsonian like History Institute for his work in macrobiotics. And my father was, I guess, one of his early students and then was really passionate about it. So because, I guess, this macrobiotic teacher was Japanese, he was fascinated about Japan, so to speak. So he came here like some foreigners did back in the 70s and 80s.
What year in the 70s did he come? What year did he come in? You don't know?
Probably 73, maybe, or 74.
He beat me because I came in 74.
Oh, right.
How old is your father now?
He was born in 47, so that means he would be like 76.
No, yeah, 70, he's 70, what do I want to say? Let me get my head right.
Because it's 23, so it's like 76. Right. We'll be turning 76 in a few weeks, actually, so.
Oh, okay, so he's a December.
December birth.
Okay, yeah. Wow. Are you close to your brothers and sisters?
Yeah, we grew up very close because, you know, when you have a lot of siblings, you usually play sandlot baseball or football together. Right. You know, you combine with other neighborhood kids and next thing you know, you have a squad of 4-on-4, for example. So Yeah, we grew up playing together a lot, and you know, as life goes on.
How many years between your youngest sister and your oldest brother? How many years between them, do you know?
About nine. I think nine. Yeah.
Oh, you guys are close then.
Yeah, really pretty close in age. Yeah.
All of them still in Japan?
No, I'm the only one in Japan.
Okay, so. Are all of them married?
No, only one other with two kids.
And your oldest brother?
My oldest is no longer with us.
Oh,
unfortunately, a question mark case that happened a few years ago. So, you know, it's sort of a common story these days.
What's a common story? I don't know what you mean.
You know that.
A question mark case.
Oh, you know, people will just, you know, suddenly pass without really an explanation.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's sort of what happened. I mean.
In the States or was he here?
He was in the States. Everyone's in the States except for my second brother, my older brother, who lives in Manchester with his British wife and two kids.
He's the one that has kids.
Okay, exactly. Kids. So it's kind of an international sort of spread.
With the two of you being outside of the U.S.
Yeah, and also being bicultural and biracial. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then the next brother, the one after the second one, the third brother.
Yeah, he still lives in Atlanta. You know, he's a healthy, smart guy, doing engineering, IT work, doing well.
Tell me about yourself as a kid growing up. Did you stay? You grew up in Japan or did you grow up in the States?
So I did the whole hoikuan or nursery program here in Japan, in Kyoto, mostly in Uji.
Okay.
And I think I lived in Sendai for a year as well. And when I was five, my family moved back to the States. My family moved to the States
because
I hadn't been to the States yet. Right. And so it was kind of interesting because being raised from birth here, I was sort of raised, you know, in native Japanese. And so when I went to the States, you know, felt like a foreigner.
You were 5 years old?
Yeah. So I didn't speak a lick of English.
Oh, so they allowed you to just learn Japanese first?
I guess that's just the approach they took.
Okay, that's good.
But in a secondary approach, they took, once our family moved to the States, was to just, you know, shift gears and then now learn English.
When you guys played together, you and your brothers, did you play in Japanese or English?
I'm sure in the beginning it was Japanese, but
Do you remember when it started to change?
Probably.
For you, how old were you when you felt like now we're speaking more English because you couldn't understand English?
I mean, I remember sitting in the classroom, I think it was kindergarten in Connecticut, because we had moved to Middleton, Connecticut. My father's from New London, so it was kind of a natural place to go was Connecticut because he's very familiar with Connecticut. And I remember sitting in the classroom, you know, not understanding anything being said. And I'm sure you remember in the States, every morning there's a national anthem. And I couldn't understand a single word this lady singing in the intercom system would be saying. But by the end of the year, I could start to actually decipher some of the words. Especially in the beginning, oh, can you see, you know, the whole Star Spangled Banner song. So I would say probably within a year or two, I was starting to get the grasp of it. So, you know, and when you grow up with other kids in the neighborhood and they're all Americans, you're kind of out of survival mode, you start to express yourself.
Did you ever have any fights or anybody teasing you or anything?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes. I remember.
Did you say I'd get my big brother?
No.
Big brothers.
I mean, I guess growing up in the 80s in the States, like late 80s, I should say, you know, kids are a little bit more cavalier and rough versus, I would say, kids growing up in the city. They're a little bit more isolated out here. You know, if you're in the same playground or, you know, friend's backyard, then you can sometimes get in a tussle. Or, for example, there's a neighborhood in Cincinnati that, because we had lived in Cincinnati for a couple years, and I think there's like a rock throwing battle happening with a neighbor, you know, which is quite dangerous. But I just remember it was like, I can't believe we're throwing rocks at each other. It was kind of a bizarre realization at that moment. But yeah, I guess that's just growing up in the States as kids, right? It's kind of normal, so to speak.
All right.
Yeah, so we did that, and then when I was in third grade, we moved to Atlanta, and I think my father was doing still this his macrobiotic foods and natural foods.
Did he work for someone, or was he working on his own?
Well, in Japan, he was trying to run this store, but after, I guess, 3-4 years, it was a little bit too early, the trend. Nowadays, you see the trend is sort of blown up.
Right.
Like Whole Foods and, you know, other natural food stores, mm-hmm. even here in Tokyo and other parts of Japan. But back then, I think it was sort of a novel concept that most people just weren't that interested or cared about. So that didn't really pan out so well. And then when he was back in the States, he was doing, you know, the food work, but he was also getting into like, what's that called? Est? I don't know if you've heard of Est.
Yeah, Est, of course, yeah, mind, with, the mind stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very similar to...
Warner Earhart, that's the guy's name.
NLP.
Right.
Neuro-linguistic programming. It was similar to that, but Est was one of the first that started off with this. Is that what you're talking about?
Sort of. It's sort of like...
You sit together and they talk about who you are and you find out who you are from the inside out, that kind of stuff.
In a way, yeah, and it's also like kind of going beyond your own personal operating system,
right?
Which is primarily driven by your ego, mm-hmm. which is that voice in your head, which will say stuff like, oh, don't forget to mention this, or, you know, that kind of stuff, which is sort of a survival thing for the human body, right? So that you can take the most advantage of situations or opportunities or just to survive.
So he did that for how long?
He's still doing that, actually.
Is that his main source of
income? It's sort of become his main, like, mission in a way. Like, okay. For him as an individual, like, his passion. Right. So, you know, I guess it's good for him because in life, it's important that you discover whatever passion you have and then you just jump in and then do it. And if you're able to discover what that passion is and do it, then essentially life is fulfilled. And I think that's a lot of things that people struggle with is finding what they're really, truly passionate about. And, you know, it's kind of a sad state of affairs for a lot of people that kind of get stuck doing the treadmill for life and, you know, never finding whatever their true passion is.
So tell me about yourself. Going through school, what did you find you enjoyed the most? Let's say when you got into high school, were you into sports? Were you into academics? What were you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like most kids, you get into high school and you're just sort of trying to get by, so to speak, socially as well, because you're merging with a lot of other middle schools. Or in my case, it was actually elementary schools because we only had elementary and high school. Okay. So I was a sub-freshman coming in, which is eighth grade. But yeah, I started getting serious about academics probably in 10th to 11th and 12th grade, especially when you start to see the light at the end of the tunnel and where you would potentially go if you go and continue on this path or, you know, actually start to climb and you can actually end up in a different world. So when I was in high school, I was primarily a wrestler. That was my key sport. I did that for 5 years and I was actually quite accomplished in it. And then I sort of focused more academics towards the end and ended up going to an engineering school in Atlanta, Georgia Tech.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a good school.
So what did you graduate with?
Electrical engineering.
Okay.
I started off in architecture because I was really passionate about architecture. Like,
for how long?
I mean, as a kid, I wanted to sort of like design things and, you know, conceptualize and have them happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once I got into the architecture program at Georgia Tech, you realize that initially, and probably still to this day, it's quite subjective. So the judgment of it is sort of weighed and balanced and measured through the perception and, you know, the judgment of, you know, someone that's above you, so to speak. So you might feel passionate about something that you created, but then that could just be demolished based on a severe you know, judgment call by someone that's above you, so to speak. And for me, that dynamic just didn't work for me. I don't know. I mean, I was passionate about it. But
how long did you do it?
I mean, I only did it for actually half a year at Tech. Okay. And then I switched out to engineering.
Cause okay. You mean while you were in school, so you did it. But you're saying that your professors or the people above you would say, okay, they'd poo-poo on whatever you set out.
Sort of. You know, okay. I just, it was just a dynamic I was unaware of until I actually did it.
Okay.
And then it just didn't click for me. Right. You know, and I thought, you know, I should probably get into something more empirical, like science or engineering, which is what I shifted gears to. And yeah, I just stuck with it.
Mm. Okay. So when you got out, what was your first job when you got out of college?
I actually worked as an intern at BMW. They have this technology office in Palo Alto. And somehow I, you know, was able to get a position there. And then after that, wasn't really sure I wanted to work in sort of the cubicle type of environment, so to speak. I mean, their office wasn't really like that, but other offices, and, you know, I had friends that were working in bigger offices, mm-hmm. you know, essentially those were kind of like cubicles. So at the same time, I was having this calling to, like, go back to Japan, you know, but it hadn't really formulated yet, but I knew I wanted to go back, you know, growing up in the States, you know, I was always sort of I always felt like an outsider a little bit. You know, no one could really pinpoint, like, you know, where I'm from. And, you know, especially in the beginning, I never actually integrated fully because of the language and, you know, I guess, physical appearance. Mm. But, you know, you get by, you just grow up, so to speak. Then, you know, come college, you meet a lot of international people, especially in engineering school. And that's actually grew up as David, which is my middle name. And then...
So no one knew that your first name was Saget?
I mean, my friends did in school.
But did they call you Saget?
I mean, think about it. You know, a substitute teacher comes in high school and they go through their role. And then they're going by the first name.
And then they're going to call you something different.
First, like Sajan or right. Sagan. Or,
so you just said, you call me a name that
everyone... It just became common. I had to, like, correct them.
So you did David.
So David was just a common, easy way for people to remember.
But your father's last name is Johnson.
The Finnish... grandfather, mm-hmm. so my father's father, and when he came to the States, he was, I think, really young, like 2, mm-hmm. and his parents were Finnish, and they had immigrated to the States, and I think it was Ellis Island, New York. When they arrived, you know, they sort of just went with a very typical American name.
Right.
That I guess on the Finnish side, when they first came to Ellis Island in New York, they adopted Johnson as their name so they could easily assimilate into the U.S. Oh. Whereas, you know, their name that was in Finnish, they thought maybe it could discriminate against them, even back then. For me, it's like an indication that even back then, it's like, you know, people wanted to sort of, you know, in a frictionless way, like, assimilate and give their best in this new world, which was America, right? And then sort of like... back then, more of a melting pot of European backgrounds. And then that sort of just spread out as, you know, the world continued revolving. Mm-hmm. So I was in California at the time, lived there for a couple years, and I wanted to come back to Japan. And the last time I had been in Japan was when I was 5, when, you know, my family had initially moved to the States.
And you didn't practice Japanese at all while you were in the States?
No, I think my parents, I guess having 5 kids, you know, they just, it was just a little
bit. And
your
mother just dropped Japanese altogether and just spoke in English?
I think, you know, it was kind of a struggle for my mom because she herself didn't speak much English coming to the States. Right.
Your father was speaking to her in Japanese?
Yeah, mostly, but because he spoke Japanese quite well. Actually, and when they came to the States, you know, my mother didn't speak much English, so of course, naturally, she was probably speaking Japanese to us. I say probably because it's such a long time ago, but I remember her telling us, because we'd asked her, you know, what happened to our Japanese, because it had actually faded, is that when we were younger, a lot of the kids would kind of make fun of us, you know, calling us typically
a bunch of stuff,
not Japanese. They would call us Chinese.
They called you Chinese,
which is like the American thing to do, right? Is the only thing they know in Asia back then is Chinese. Right. But you know, as kids, you're like, whoa, what's going on?
Wait. Your school was mostly white when you went to it.
Yes, yes.
What about when you went to Atlanta?
Oh, very different, because you know, it's the
South. Was mixed.
It was very mixed. You know, a lot more African Americans there.
That's what I was
thinking. And even the high school I went to, there was like this integration program where they would have like kids from like other parts of the county come to our high school so that they could receive the same level of education.
Right.
So, you know, it was quite integrated. Now, everyone was okay with it because, you know, through that system, our sports programs got really strong. You know, I was in wrestling, and there are some great people and great wrestlers that, right. you know, were
all ethnicities, right.
Exactly.
Of course.
You know, I had some friends on both sides, and it was great.
So. And I think it's interesting because when you start to get into wrestling, you're touching. You guys are holding each other. No, I know that.
But see, sweat.
But you find out stuff that you never find out. You can't go up to a man and say, "Well, I wonder what you smell like or what you feel like."
But when you're wrestling, you start thinking,
"Wow, that's interesting," because all of us are a little different.
Yeah.
But there's so many similarities.
There are. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, when you get into the ring, it's very like, you know, you have to, there's no excuses. It's
3 minutes the longest, listen, that's the longest time in your whole life.
It's actually 2 minutes, 2 minutes, two,
2 minutes.
2 minutes,
yeah, it felt like
so.
Six minutes total. I wrestled every summer, I was a gymnast.
Oh, right,
and
okay.
We didn't even need to, I don't know why we wrestled, but we didn't do weight training.
Okay.
That wasn't a thing for gymnasts then, because our body was our weight.
Sure.
But wrestling was, and we didn't need the endurance, because if you think about it, gymnasts, the longest time we'll do anything is 1 minute, 60 seconds.
Right.
That's on floor.
Right.
Everything else is shorter, but wrestling, that 2 minutes,
by
the third round, you're like, you said, just give up. Why don't you just, if you don't fall over, I'll fall over. That's how hard it was for me.
It's intense, yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it's like the human equivalent of, like, you know, two male animals, you know, competing over the female or something. You know,
right.
It's like so intense, that this battle. But, and then so for wrestling, I feel like it's like the human equivalent where you're giving it your all. So by the time the time's up, like 2, 3, 6 minutes, you're completely exhausted.
You are.
Yeah.
It takes something else. It takes a will for you to really win.
It takes a lot of will.
Because your body's just completely spent. So
and
you did that throughout.
Battles.
You did that throughout high school, even in college.
No, I thought about going to college, but I, you know, it was a choice between going to like a D3 school wrestling scholarship or going to Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech is a D1 school and very famous for engineering.
Now, D3 and D1, tell me, what's that mean?
It's just Division 3, Division 1.
Okay, and Division 1's the best?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's like the Michigan, Stanford, University of Texas.
So were you doing level. Pretty good at wrestling?
I think so. I placed twice in state.
Okay.
Fifth and third.
Because you do it the way we did it. We did league, then we did city, then we did state, then you went national.
Yeah, I didn't go national.
As far as I made it was the city.
Oh, right. Sheesh. I mean, I was
on the league city gymnastics.
I won the county championship a couple times as well as the regional championship.
Well, all
times.
Your brothers wrestlers too?
Yeah, actually.
Well, that's why you come on now, man. You have all your brothers ahead of you, and you get to practice with them. Everybody else is coming in.
They were all pretty good as well. So
they were good. Yeah,
yeah,
I think so.
So, you know, it was.
And you guys shared tips and moves and holds and everything.
Yeah, I think
right?
It was more like moral and moral support. You know, during the matches. You know, if you have a brother on the sideline yelling at you, like, hey, you know, give him the.
You're right.
I can't remember anymore.
But it doesn't matter. But the thing is, they were there.
Yeah. Like, pin him, you know.
Right.
You know, I'm like,
Did your parents come to your meets?
Yeah, actually, they didn't come very often.
But they did come sometimes?
No, they didn't.
They very often, and they never came.
I think came like twice. So, I think my father came once because I directly asked him to come.
Did you?
It's like, hey, you should come. It's a championship, you know. And I won, actually.
Right.
And so.
So tell me how you got to Japan.
So, you know, I saved up some money when I was in California and...
Working with BMW?
No, I only did that for like 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
And then afterwards, you know, I'm living alone in California with a bunch of student loan debt from Georgia Tech. You know, growing up a big family, parents usually can't pay colleges for all the kids. So, you know, we were sort of independent as kids growing up. And so I kind of hustled. Hustle meaning like working at in the food and beverage industry, you know, like waiting tables and
stuff like that.
Yeah, I even worked at like a golf and country club for a few months just to see, you know, whatever was available.
Okay.
And after that, I mean, everything was through Craigslist, because a long time ago, Craigslist was a way to find a place to live or maybe a job. You know, I was sort of just doing this all on my own. And, you know, at that time, it was like going paycheck to paycheck, just trying to survive in California without having to go back to Atlanta, back home, right?
Right, live with your parents.
Yeah,
right.
So I ended up like working in the city of San Francisco for a year and a half at this like fancy Japanese restaurant. And it was actually pretty good because in San Francisco, they have a ordinance where, you know, employees in F&B, whatever level, get paid minimum wage. And in the city, it was like $9 an hour, which compared to Atlanta and the F&B industry at $2 or something an hour, there's a gray area there.
But had you ever worked in Atlanta in the F&B?
Yeah, area? I did while I was in college because I...
Oh, okay, so you knew it from that.
Yeah, okay. I was doing it, I was working almost full-time and doing engineering school full-time. Okay. And the reason why I was doing working full-time is making all that money I saved, and then every summer I would travel to Europe with either myself or my friends backpacking.
Oh, that's neat.
Just, I don't know, I was curious about the world.
But you never came to Asia.
I never went to Japan. But on my trip back to Japan, I did end up going to Thailand for a month with a good friend of mine from San Francisco. And then I came to Tokyo and moved, and then started my life here.
Okay. So when was that?
That was in 2006 to 2007, sort of in the fall and early winter.
And you've been married how long now?
About 10, 11 years soon.
Yeah. How many kids?
Just one. We only have one.
How old is your...
He's 10.
He's 10?
Yeah, so...
Okay, so a year after you married, you had your kids.
Yeah, pretty much.
So again, before I end the podcast, there's a question I'd like to ask.
Okay.
All right, if you could, or if you wanted to, and you could go back in time with all the knowledge you have now, to see the younger Sagan and give him advice.
Okay.
If you were to give him advice, what advice would you give him, and how old would he be?
That's quite a deep question. I have... some minor regrets where you hit some speed bumps or make some mistakes, but I'm grateful for where I am now and with my wife and my son, and life is good. I don't want to sort of pose the notion that there's an imperfection in life, because I do have gratitude for life. But the one small thing would be maybe to inspire my younger self to be more proactive in learning Japanese as a language. I feel like I've gotten a very good grasp of it now, but it's nowhere near as good as I wish it were. So living in Japan is probably the only thing I would kind of wish differently, only so that I could connect to more people and at a deeper level. But that's about it.
All right, Sagan. I like that. And it's a continuation, so you don't have to think that you're done now. So you're going to get better and better.
I'm just taking it one step.
I don't know anyone that knows any of their languages to its umpteenth.
Absolutely.
It's always, they die still not knowing stuff in their own language.
Exactly. So right. It's just a desire to, reach out more, so to speak.
I want to thank all of you for watching this podcast or listening to it. And never forget, it's all on loan, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.